to the Elmont Online Podcast. I'm Aubrey Phillips. It's day 73 of New York on pause. Physical distancing has worked. Sadly, it's 10 days since the murder of George Floyd. And black people, who die at significantly higher rates from COVID-19, has had to choose between two public health crises, COVID-19 and state-sponsored racism. Today's commentary features Elmont's young voices. T-Up recognizes Goldie Harrison, Christine Rivera, and Eric Blomoville for their respective roles in organizing a peaceful, purposeful demonstration against systemic racism. This, while adhering, as best they could, to proper COVID-19 spread prevention strategies. The voice you hear next is Alicia Munyon. Ms. Munyon is an Elmont Memorial High School alumna. She is a thinker. Her academic focus was that of political philosophy.
Hello, everyone. My name is Alicia Munyon, and I am alumni of Elmont Memorial High School, a place of beautiful diversity and black excellence. Let me repeat that, black excellence. Here we stand today at the foot of this place of education where we learned about the civil rights movement that happened years ago. Yet here we stand, united together, still fighting for the same cause. In the face of division, to look the enemy in the eyes. This is not the dialogue of black versus white. It is us. We, humanity against racism. When one race suffers, we all suffer. This is a story that started centuries ago. From the time that our ancestors were enslaved, from the times that we were oppressed, from the times that we were silenced from the table, from the socioeconomic opportunities that we have been barred from, from the unequal places that we start our journeys for success from. This is our chance to talk. This is our chance to express our grievances to the world. There is a movement arising and we are part of this. It is here and now. This has been too long brushed under the table for far too long. This is a time to stand up for what is right. To stand up for the basic principles that every human being deserves. The goal here is human equality, peace, and unity. The pain of our brothers and sisters that died because of something as frivolous as the skin that they were born with. Ahmaud Arbery, Eric Garner, Trayvon Martin, Michael Brown, Sandra Bland. Only ones. Say their names. Feel it in your bones. We must continue to speak their names until the world hears it. Until we can look our fellow man in the eyes. Until we can look our fellow man in the eyes and truly see each other for what we are. Human beings. Beyond the colors of our skin, all deserving to live a life on this beautiful earth, striving to make the planet a better place than how we entered it, so that we can see real change, real shifts into this new world. The power is in our numbers. The power is in our spices of life. The power is in our culture. The power is in our world-changing achievements. The power is in our art and dances. The power is in our unique perspectives. The power is in our voices. All the beauty that we bring to this world, let it shine. This is our moment of unity. This is our moment of peace. This is our moment of equality. And we will not speak it until we are heard, and until this is achieved. We will not be silenced any longer. Stand up and speak your voice. Our voices will tell the truth of our burdens and carry us to equality. There is a light waiting at the end of this. This is the light of human unity. Hold this vision in your hearts and remember what we are working towards. Our collective voices will come together on the world and show us the truth of our message, the truth of human unity.
Belmont Online Podcast. I'm Aubrey Phillips. This T-Op Jazz series explores the impact of COVID-19 on jazz performers and fans. Our first jazz podcast introduced the possibility of the hybrid club scene. Today we continue the conversation with trombonist, composer, educator, and producer Clifton Anderson. Mr. Anderson's first recording as a leader and composer is his 1997 album titled Landmarks. We can't wait for his upcoming release. Been down this road before. This is part one of a two-part series with Mr. Anderson. I'll be right back with the conversation. You're listening to the Elmont Online Podcast. I'm Aubrey Phillips. We have on the phone with us today jazz trombonist Clifton Anderson. Mr. Anderson, welcome to the Elmont Online Podcast.
How are you, Aubrey? It's a pleasure to be with you this afternoon.
Well, it's a pleasure having you. We are trying on the Elmont Online Podcast to explore this scene that you and I participate in, you as a performer, composer, and me as a fan, and that is the small jazz club scene. But before we get to the small jazz club scene and how COVID-19 may have affected it, I just want to ask you a little bit about how you're doing, how is the family doing now that we've gone through some 8 weeks of New York on pause. How are you?
Well, you know, thank you for asking. Everybody's doing okay. We're just trying to get acclimated into this different type of lifestyle, you know, not really going out too often and making sure that we're appropriately protected.
Yes.
With our masks and our gloves and whatever else we need, eyewear, whatever else we have to do, depending on how involved we're getting with people.
Absolutely. It has to be troubling for someone like yourself, who is not only accustomed to, but essentially thrives in small environments with many, many people coming up to you, shaking your hand, etc. I'm going to just jump right into our conversation. The last time I saw you perform, it was at a very beautiful, small club, essentially upstate New York, at least from where I live. And it was enjoyable. It was everything that small clubs are. And it dawned on me, now that we may be approaching a time when regulations regarding the number of people that can be assembled in any given space will be reduced, I am wondering, how is that going to affect you, both economically and musically? So I'm listening.
Well, I think, if my memory serves me correctly, I think that club that was up in Peekskill, I think, where...
That is correct.
Where I saw you last at that. And I love playing at that particular venue because it's intimate, it's very intimate, and the owners of that establishment, they're true music lovers.
Yes.
And they show a lot of respect for the particular kind of music that I've involved in. And so it's always, I like to play there. I don't play there for the money.
Right.
I play there just for the joy of playing to a very receptive and, I would say, for the most part, an informed audience.
Uh-huh.
You know, I have a following up there. So whenever I perform there, I mean, the people know my music. And before I go on, a lot of times they'll ask to play one of my particular songs that they know. So it's always great to play in a small venue like that. I mean, the interaction, the energy that you can get from the audience is very immediate.
Right,
know?
Right.
And it's a different experience for those of us who are performers. You get a very immediate kind of feedback. However, mm-hmm. playing in small venues like that, we can't really make a living.
Correct.
So I do it anyway because I love to be that close to people and get that kind of energy from as often as I can, you know.
Right, right.
The size of the venues vary for me. I played like that club, mm-hmm. which for your listeners who might not know, that place holds about maybe 70 people at the maximum.
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
But usually for me, I have to play in places that hold at least 100, maybe 150, 100 to 200 people in terms of the club size.
Right.
Usually to be able to make any kind of real money at all.
Right.
And then there's the concert halls. The performing arts centers usually hold about 300 to 500 people.
Right.
And the concert halls are, of course, are larger, where you go up to maybe 800 to could be up to 2,000 people.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Okay.
You don't get the same immediate kind of, you do get it, but it's a different kind of energy. You're not so close to the people, so you don't get it right away. You have to be a little bit more discerning mm-hmm. to feel out an audience and to get a response and to know that you're really engaged, that the audience is really engaged with you when you're playing those larger rooms. You know?
Right.
So, which is why we have to do it because, of course, we make a lot more money.
Correct.
But the kind of immediate gratification is a little bit different, you know, when you're on the stage, when you're actually performing. I shouldn't call it gratification. I should actually call it, it's more of like a conversation, you know.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Even though the audience is not speaking, you're having a rapport with them.
Absolutely. You know? There is that yeah. conversation that you're having just based on body language, et cetera.
Yeah.
Yes. I love the small club. So one of the things that interests me and the people like me is this idea that the small club experience, and our first podcast on this issue, we spoke to performer TK Blue, and he raised the notion of a hybrid small club. Essentially, fewer people in the club, but maybe with an online component to the experience. And I've sort of mulled that over, and I'm thinking, you know, the thing that you just said about working in larger venues, then that begins to sort of seep into or be infused into the small club experience, because now it's a smaller space, less people, but then you have this online experience. I just think that might be interesting, but as a performer, would you be open to that kind of a hybrid solution for smaller venues?
Well, yes, we may have to be open to that whether we like it or not. At this point, you know, it's very very interesting because I played, there's another small room that I played, and I don't even know if they do still doing a jazz series, but it was a town in New York right next to Nyack, New York, called Piermont. There's a blues club that's there, and it's a very well-known blues club. Been there for many, many years. A lot of blues artists have come through there. But it's not a big place.
Right.
And I have a friend who's a jazz musician, actually, that started presenting jazz music there. And he had me there a few times. And he had a lot of really great jazz musicians come through there as well. Wallace Roney, the late, great Wallace Roney, played there.
Wow.
And a lot of other people. And the first time I played there, it was interesting because I drew a lot of people.
Uh-huh.
And the promoter, he was saying, man, you had more people than anybody who's been in here. You know, and so, I mean, it wasn't like sold out or anything. It was crowded.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But that was nice to know. And the audience was very receptive and everything. And then I came back another time. And I had this particular night that I played there the second time, because this kind of is leading to your question.
Go ahead.
We got there and the band, we had a very nice rapport amongst the musicians this particular night.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a drummer that had been working with me at the time for quite a bit and two other musicians that had started, younger guys, that started playing with me.
Right.
And so when we came onto the bandstand to play, you know, I looked out in the audience and there were like five people in the audience. So, wow, man, you know, like nobody turned out. Nobody came out tonight.
You're in your living room.
Last time we played there was, you know, the place was pretty crowded.
Right.
So, you know, my feeling is like, it doesn't matter to me what number of people are in a club. Really. I'm there to do something that's going to be special for that night.
Yes.
That's it. I only get one shot.
Exactly.
You know? And that's that music that happens is never going to really happen again that way. So you got to try, as an artist, you go for it. You go for the very best that you can deliver in that moment.
Right.
And so, you know, we always play, my uncle would say, you know, like when he was young, everybody would just play as if that was their last job that they were ever going to play.
Exactly.
That's how you have to, and that's how we play. So I called the first tune, which was a very up-tempo tune.
Uh-huh.
And I realized that these guys had a lot of fun with it. And I said, you know, I realized that these guys just wanted to play fast the whole night. They just wanted to play up-tempo all night.
Uh-huh.
So that's what we did.
Uh-huh.
And we did it pretty well. The band sounded pretty good, and everybody was really playing, was in it. And it was a kind of a unique experience. And the audience, the five people that were in the audience, were completely blown away.
Ah.
And one of the guys actually ended up becoming a friend of mine and started following me around to all my different jobs, videotaping me.
Ooh.
And some of that videotape content is up online now. And he became like this long-term fan, this long, lifelong fan of mine, along with a couple of the other people that were at that particular show. And like I said, it was only five people.
Right.
Whole place.
You know, that's the experience that I often seek, just as a fan. I know I love talking to jazz musicians. I love talking to people in general. But with musicians, there is this connection. There is this dance that occurs between the audience and the performers that the fewer fans there are, the more advantageous it is to the fan.
Yeah.
You know. So I get that experience. I like that.
Every 10 years, the census comes along, and it seems like everyone I know always asks the same two questions. What is the census, and why does it even matter? Let me give it to you straight. The census counts every single person living in America. An accurate count of our community tells us where there are more people, and where there are more people, there are more needs. Our participation could impact how public funding flows to our schools, health clinics, senior care, job training, and housing. It even determines our congressional representation. I don't know about you, but it sure sounds like the census matters to me. This year, take a little time for the 2020 census. You can complete it online, by phone, or by mail, and make sure you count everybody you live with. Your mama, daddy, sweetheart, babies, roommates, everyone. This chance only comes every 10 years, so let's step up and be counted.
Shape your future. Start here. Learn more at 2020census.gov. Paid for by U.S. Census Bureau.
That's interesting. So back to this notion of the hybrid solution, you're okay with maybe having that become part of the model for jazz performances going forward?
Yeah, I think that temporarily it may solve a couple of issues because, first of all, I think the music will be different if there's no audience at all.
Yeah.
It will be different than if there, even if the audience is small, if there are 20 people in a tent, 10 to 20 people, in a club,
right?
That would make the music different than if there's nobody there at all.
Of course.
You know, and I say that because performers that we do feed off of a live audience.
Right.
There is something that we get from a live audience. I've had the opportunity to perform on some of the largest stages on the planet and some of the smallest.
Right.
So I've run the total gamut.
Right.
And I've done performances in front of maybe 8,000 people where I came out with not under my own name, but with my uncle.
Uh-huh.
We would come out on the stage and we had to stand there for about 10 minutes before we played a note because the people were yelling and screaming and
applauding
and doing stuff for about 10 minutes before we could even play a note.
Right.
And so when you feel that as an artist getting ready to perform, that already ignites something in you that's
Absolutely.
Very special that might not have been there otherwise, you know.
Right.
It can take the music someplace else. There's always, whenever you throw a different spice into the pot, it's going to change. It doesn't necessarily make it better or worse, but it might take in a different direction.
Right.
That would be just like unique, you know.
Yes.
And so it's the same. So that's the idea. It's like, you know, I think we need to have some people in the audience. Because if we just do like a streaming thing where the band is up there and just playing, I don't know that we know that every musician will be as inspired.
That, you know, I think.
As if they have some people in the audience.
As if there are people there.
Action.
Yeah.
And
it's interesting about that experience, right? Because I attend almost every year. I attend one of the jazz festivals, either the Newport Jazz Festival or something to that effect. So I get it, because even that, as large as it is, it's still small. It still gives you that feeling of warmth, and there is still some very nice interaction and play with the audience. That's great. So I'm going to move on to a different part of this conversation. I'm going to ask you to tell us a little bit about your first trombone.
First trombone?
Yes.
Now let me see, can I remember that far back?
I'll tell you why I asked that question before you answer. Because the person that gave it to you cost me a lot of money. In a wonderful way. So we'll get to that. Yes. Tell us a little bit about, because I know that was some influence on you.
Well, I've told this story before. My mother took me to the movies to see, maybe it was Dick Van Dyke, I think. I don't remember who starred in this movie now. But it was The Music Man.
I see.
And there was a scene that was in the movie where they had a parade. And at the parade, they played this song, 76 Trombones. They showed these trombones and everybody's like at the side waving and, you know, so I was 7 years old and I told my mother, I want to play that.
Mm-hmm.
I come from a musical family, so everybody had to play an instrument in my family. So it was just at a certain age, you had to stake your claim, like, what instrument are you going to play? Now, what do you want to play?
Uh-huh.
So I told my mother, I said, well, I want to play that instrument. So my mother told my uncle, who for your listeners who may not know, is the legendary jazz artist Sonny Rollins, saxophone colossus. She told my uncle that I wanted to play the trombone, and he went and bought me my first trombone. And I had that instrument. I was 7 years old. I mean, I started fooling around on it, but I used to knock it up against the wall and everything, too. You know how you were a little kid, and you know. But I had the instrument, and I was playing it, and my mother took me to with that particular horn. I don't remember what brand that horn was. I cannot remember. I can look at it now, but I can't remember what the brand was. It was a good horn, though.
Uh-huh.
But it wasn't like a King or a Con trombone or a Bach. It wasn't one of those major brands.
I see.
But I had it, and my mother took me for a lesson. And the very first lesson that I took, the teacher told me to take the horn out, and I was able to put it together. You know, I was already fooling around with it at home.
Right.
But I was small. I was only 7 years old, so I had to balance the slide. When I went out on the positions, I had to put it on my foot to hold it up.
Because right.
I couldn't reach all the way out, you know. But he told me to blow, and the first note that I blew, he told my mother, he said, "Your son has a special talent for this instrument. You should make sure that he takes lessons
wow.
on this instrument." And she said, "Well, why?" He said, "Because he can get a really, really beautiful sound on this. And this is like a very hard instrument to just pick up and get a good sound on." He said, "Most children who pick up this instrument and blow it, it doesn't sound very good." You know. But he said he already has a sound, a good
wow.
sound on the instrument.
Wow.
So that's how it started off.
That's
you know?
The story.
But that horn that my uncle got me, that first horn was stolen.
Hmm.
Unfortunately, we had a robbery of our home in the early 70s. And that horn was in the house. And I had two horns, actually. And they stole both of them.
Ah, well, if only. So, I hope whoever yeah. stole that actually understands what they have.
Well, yeah, they picked it up at some point, but I'm sorry I didn't have it. I got another one shortly thereafter. Just continue from there, you know.
Yes. The Elmont Online Podcast is brought to you by www.elmont.org, where residents go for cutting-edge commentary, real-time news feeds, and more. Elmont.org, building a stronger community since 1999. Thank you for listening. Between now and the next time we meet, be safe. I'm Aubrey Phillips.